Hello, and welcome to another episode of Endeavors. On today's show, I speak with producer Lucy Tularachu and musician Chris Harper. That's coming up on Endeavors. In about 24 hours from now, I will be in Munich for my German-Austrian Christmas vacation. Little reward to myself for completing and passing my teacher training course. I apologize that there was no show up last week. It was the last week of class and things were just got really intense in terms of schoolwork and trying to get everything done on time and assignments and essays and lesson plans and all that. But you will get two shows this week, so I appreciate the patience. Also, I apologize for my voice if it's sounding a little gnarly. I think now that school's over, my body is relaxing a little bit, and so I've got just a wee bit of the sniffles. So if you're wondering why I sound a bit grovelly, probably just a case of, everything piling up over the last couple of weeks. But we do have a really, really good show today. Very interesting show about two Indigenous artists. My first artist is Lucy Tularuch, who is a producer, and her company has teamed up with the Weather Channel to produce weather segments in Inuktitut. As it states, there are eight distinct climate regions in Canada. The Nunavut region is certainly one of them, with very cold, harsh winters and short, cool summers and low precipitations. Uvagut TV, in collaboration with the network, are pleased to announce four Inuktitut dialect weather reports every hour, including showing ice conditions in the winter and mosquitoes in the summer season. 4 3-minute weather forecast 16 times a day for the Inuit regions of Natsiak, Nunavik, Nunavut, and Nuntasivut. Working with five translators, Lucy Tularachu provided the Weather Network with the right terminology for the dialects in those regions. Lucy talks about not only how Uvagut TV was created, being the first Inuktitut language television station, but also about working with the Weather Network to create these broadcasts. Later on in the program, you'll also be hearing from Indigenous musician Chris Harper, who is featured in Season 2 of the series Amplify on APTN, and it talks about how he set music to his mother's poetry for the first time. But right now, this is my interview with Lucy Tularachu.
We'll be right back. So Lucy, I know you're the producer, right? Do I have that right? Are you the producer of and are is it an Inuit language weather broadcast? Do I have that right?
We teamed up with the Weather Network, Ovogo TV teamed up with the Weather Network, and we started doing a project collecting Inuktitut terminology in four different dialects
Okay.
in Inuktitut.
What is the, we're seeing a lot more, I guess, exposure and representation of indigenous stories on screen. What was the importance of this for you?
The Weather Network channel specifically, or for Ovogo TV?
Well, both, but I was thinking specifically of the Weather Network.
This means well to me because it comes in four different dialects in four different regions of the Arctic communities. Respecting that we all speak Inuktitut, but we have very different dialects throughout Canada. And so I thought this was unique because we're respecting each region's main dialect during the Weather Network.
That's interesting because I think a lot of people might sort of lump all the languages and all the dialects together, but how many different dialects would you say there are, and how many do you cover?
There's a lot of dialects. I cannot say specifically how many because there's Inuit throughout the Soka Polar Arctic. But we are covering four dialects on our channel on Ovogo TV: the Northwest Territories Inuvialuit region, the Arviat region, which is the Central Nunavut, Baffin region, Nunavik, and Labrador. So five altogether. Well,
And
four regions, but five dialects.
four regions, five dialects. Yes. And
Yes.
something like this where we're seeing a lot more other languages seen on TV, like Omni is doing something. How do you think something like this might lead to other factual based programs in indigenous languages?
I hope it encourages other BDUs, other cable companies to collaborate with Inuit or First Nations or Métis language and be able to have reconciliation happening in present and real action. I think this is part of reconciliation, considering that the Weather Network we teamed up with is well respected, and we're pretty well respected filmmakers or documentary. Or in this case, broadcasting. So we appreciate that space given to us to be able to show our own language. And I encourage and I hope that we see other languages in First Nations, Inuktitut or Métis.
And where do you talk about reconciliation, but where do you think we are overall, generally, in terms of Indigenous representation in media, whether it's fictional Indigenous created stories or whether it's a more factual based program?
That's a good question, and I think I need time to answer it more. But as far as I was a kid, there was not a lot of Indigenous films at all or shows. And so now that I'm in my mid-40s, I'm seeing more Indigenous being represented either in fiction or nonfiction. And I think either or, it's very important to see it from both either fiction stories or nonfiction or documentary for and by Indigenous people.
And I mean, in Fortunately, you know, the Weather Network teamed up, but as someone in the business, how do you think we're doing in terms of funding? Has it been has funding become easier or about the same?
I can't say the same because it was much harder to get funding back in the day when I first started in the film as actor and seeing Zacharias applying for fundings versus now it's easier for me as a next generation filmmaker or broadcaster. It's easier for me to get access to funding, but the pocket is still minimal compared to English and French broadcasting funds.
You know, you talk about the next generation, and we're seeing, you know, filmmakers from, you know, a whole bunch of different generations. What piece of advice would you have for maybe young, aspiring, Indigenous filmmakers and storytellers?
Take time to ask questions to elders and take time to listen and record as much as you can. And respect our language if you can. Relearn it if you need to without feeling shame. And for us Inuktitut speakers, don't shame other Inuit who are trying to relearn Inuktitut. It's forced upon them to not learn Inuktitut because the system is so set up to fail Inuktitut in general, where you cannot even take Inuktitut classes anywhere outside of our communities or hamlets. If you live Nunavut or Nunavik, we don't have Inuktitut classes in French provinces or English provinces. So Inuktitut programming, I find, is their way to get that as much available as much as possible.
You know, on that note, you know, in school, many kids study French or Spanish. Do you think that all Canadians should be exposed to an Indigenous language in their education?
Absolutely. Even in the present day, when I speak in Inuktitut to let's say a cashier or a taxi driver or Uber driver, most times they're wondering what language I'm speaking. And if I say Inuktitut, they may not know what it is. So it's 2023, going on 2024. Catch up to where you are visiting, catch up to our language, at least to recognize it's either Inuktitut or Ojibwe or whatever indigenous language it may be. Sometimes I'm asked if I'm related to First Nations and we're a separate ethnic group. We're both indigenous, but we're not the same ethnic group.
And I think that's a very important distinction. What are some maybe other misconceptions that what you're doing can you're what do what are some other misconceptions people have about your community that are present that maybe you are working to correct, if any?
People also assume that our education is all covered. Well, of course, our education is covered up to high school, like the rest of Canadians. We also have to, if we're lucky, we may get funding from our regional representative. But do understand, we do too pay for uniforms, school supplies, and school fees, just as anyone, as long as we're not treated member of where we choose to live, we pay just as any other Canadian. And a lot of Canadians who are not Inuit or First Nations or Métis don't understand that, and they assume we are given hands free stuff. We don't. I pay for my child's university. We are taxpayers.
What are you hoping comes out of this Weather Network team up?
for our elders to understand what the conditions of the weather is in their own language without having to ask someone, so what does the weather say today? Yeah. For us and next generations to know the terminologies in Inuktitut. And that's beautiful. I was starting to forget myself, northwest, east, south in Inuktitut. And so collecting these words, terminologies, and passing them to the Weather Network team, collecting them from five different dialects was very interesting for me, even though I speak fluently and understand Inuktitut. It was still a learning curve for me as well.
It's a very fascinating and I think a very important project that you are doing. And I hope it leads to further indigenous-led factual-based programs and all that. I apologize that our time was so short today, but thank you so much for taking the moments out of your day to come speak with me about this very I think very inspiring work that you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you for your interest.
you have a good rest of your day.
Oyenname. Good day.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
Once again, that was my interview with Lucy Tudorajuc, and she is the producer, in conjunction with the Weather Network, of new Inuktitut language weather forecasts that will be airing on the Weather Network. From Indigenous weather networks to Indigenous musicians. Chris Harper. Chris is featured in season 2 of an APTN series called Amplify, which showcases the powerful diversity of Indigenous music in Canada. Each episode meets an Indigenous singer-songwriter as they explore the creation of a new song based on a personal source of inspiration. Chris's episode airs on Friday, the 22nd, and features a song that he adapted from his mother's poetry. The episode is called Legacy, and in it, Chris embraces his family's artistic legacy and for the first time creates a song using the poetry of his late mother, Hillary Harper, who was an accomplished beadworker, beadmaker. And so Chris talks about how the process of using his mother's words and his music and how that fits into his overall ethos as a musician, artist, and storyteller. And about 25 minutes, halfway through the interview, we are joined by Chris's collaborator on the song, who is also featured in the episode, Jason Boris, who is also a musician and producer. This is my conversation with Chris Harper and Jason Boris.
Hello.
Okay, how you doing, Dan?
Good, good. Sorry for the wait. Just a small hiccup with my Wi-Fi, but I'm good to go now.
Right back at you. I'm not sure too. Jason had a bit of an issue last night at the he works at a venue in Edmonton,
Okay.
and the subs blew up.
Oh no.
Yeah, so he is going to try to step in. I've sent him the link, but
Okay.
he's kind of dealing with that right now. With the venue, they're trying to track down subs. Yeah.
Yeah,
You know how it is.
sometimes you're just at the mercy of somebody else or something else, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so sorry, I'm working off my Mac Mini, so I don't have a camera,
It's all
but if
right.
yeah, if this is audio only, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, my video only activates because it's my default setting on Zoom, and because sometimes I need it for other things, and sometimes I find just having video can get a better conversation. But yeah, it's just audio, so don't worry about anything. Perfect. All right, let's do this. Perfect. Chris Harper, hello, how are we today?
Hey, I'm doing all right. Good to hear from you.
Good to hear you, man. So you are part of this really cool series on Indigenous artists called Amplify, and you're featured, and I believe the episode is called Legacy. How did you come to be a part of this? Or did Shane just reach out to you and say, "Hey, can I interview you?"
Oh, well, actually, no. Okay, so I believe, I'm not sure how it actually got down to my friend Connor McNally, but in Edmonton, Connor is a filmmaker, and I've had the opportunity, the good pleasure of making some music for a few of Connor's productions, and he's just been kind of, to be honest, he's been a champion of some of the work I've been doing, kind of. Before a lot of people and kind of even still, like, you know what I mean? Like
Yeah.
he'll keep in touch. And so he knew I was making art and stuff. And he was like, man, I got asked to do this thing. They asked me if we had any artists in mind. And I just thought of you immediately. So I was like, okay, wow. So that's kind of how it came to be. I didn't know Shane, or actually I still don't know Shane. I don't know, really anyone from the production from before. This is everyone was kind of a new meet for the exception of Connor. So, yeah.
And in this episode, obviously your music is featured, but you talk a lot about your mother who, worked and was a beater and did mixed media and wrote a lot of poetry. Why did you feel that, and or was this a conversation you had with Connor about that this was the right time and the right way to tell your mother's story?
Yeah, I guess some of that in this specific case, we were kind of, I guess I was put with the opportunity to write something specific for this show. And that's I do work like this, and actually I had prepared a song, to be honest, that was something that was just brand new composition, just by myself kind of thing. Sorry, one moment. But yeah, when I talked to Jason about it, because my friend's good friend and collaborator, Jason Borden, he ends up being kind of head in charge of all the mixing to do with our recordings. So I kind of what I showed him what I was working on. I was like, here's the concept, we're probably we're going to go into the studio and stuff like this, so I'll probably bring you in. And he was like, you know what, man, like we sorry we have these we have I don't know how many tracks. I'm not even going to bother putting a number on it, but it's getting to be a lot, and we just keep piling them up. And so we had this, and we had this experience a couple of years ago where we got to record at the National Music Center and record with including the synthesizer library that they have there, the Living Collection, as well as working with like Tonto and some of these incredible like one-off synthesizers. And so anyway, he was like, yo dude, like this song that you made is cool, but he's like, we got these tracks, and like that one specifically about my mom, and well, it wasn't about her, it was actually her poem that we decided to put to music. He was like, That song was that's the one that's kind of outside of the majority of our tracks. It's like it was a slightly, it just had a different concept because it was my mother's poetry, and it was, so we decided to use that for this production. It seemed like it was just kind of perfect for us to use this opportunity, especially where it's like kind of national, even international to some degree, to kind of speak about some of the tenets when it comes to this concept of indigenous identity. And a lot of that, what it really boils down to, we're talking about matriarchies, we're talking about pre-existing nations that existed here prior to any contact from across any border. And this is something that spans in the years of millions. But a lot of times with colonial history and the colonized worldviews, they try to minimize that down to somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 to 13,000 years. This becomes an incredibly, I guess, what you would say, like a politicized bit of information. So anyway, I'm talking about this at all costs, at all levels, and at all times. So I just infuse this into the work, and this is part of the way I just saw this importance would be, okay, we're going to use my mother's poem. This is a poem too that is I was able to beautifully get clearance while my mother was alive, because I was able to speak to her about how we were working on this project and stuff at that time, and she was very supportive, and she allowed me to choose one of her poems, which at the time when I did choose that one, she was like, "Are you sure you want to do that one?" But the only I say that too because of just the kind of weight of the lyrics and some of the concepts in that her poem. But I just feel like this is what we're talking about. We're talking about some of the things that are harder to talk about, and in a lot of cases, there is a root to all this, and she's a woman, and she birthed all creation. So we're always giving it up to the one that we all come from.
There is a very strong tradition, if you will, of matriarchy and sort of mothers leading the charge in indigenous cultures. What do you attribute that to? Where do you think that comes from?
I guess where we can. If we just look at the question just slightly differently, because I appreciate the question, and it's good and all that, but what we're really actually getting down to is where did we start focusing on men? And a lot of times what we're dealing with is what comes down to, like, I mean, there's a lot of instances, but there are some important parts on this kind of timeline that we kind of talk about. And a lot of times, with the Bible, the concept is this 2000 year concept. So then if we are talking 2000 years, in 325 was the year that Constantine decided to take the woman out of that Holy Trinity, which at that time she was at, it wasn't at the apex, because the apex was built differently. It was upside down, an upside down triangle where you had the mother, the father, and the child. This was Isis, Osiris, and Horus. And this is an ancient story. And it came from a mother, because all life comes from a mother. And so it's a lot of it is we're having to fight back against some of the ideologies that have been kind of embedded in the teachings of the modern day society. But a lot of those teachings were kind of have this Constantinian heritage, and they have this kind of like this note that essentially you can see where there was almost a shift in the world, in a sense, in how it went from women who had were actually kind of at the forefront, as you said, or the kind of the top of these kind of matriarchal kind of networks and nations. And actually, just to go back just a slight bit, and to quote Roz Bae, she said, "There is no nation built by a man. A man is only able to build a corporation. Women create nations. They're the only ones who are able to actually birth a nation." So this is where we're talking about. So a lot of times, like it's it, yeah, it, we're like, why? Yeah, it's interesting how the indigenous people looked at it, but a lot of times actually, it's that's kind of like a part of nature. This is kind of going down to natural law. And but what we're in like currently at the moment is this kind of like matrix of like, you know, unusual like virtual law, or in a lot of cases color-coded law, and it's not natural. And so there's a, you know, we're constantly having to kind of fight this kind of stuff, and obviously, you know, we're all like existing still in these societies where some of these other mindsets are still seemingly new for many, and then in other for other people, that this is like how we're born. You know, you're born with these kind of concepts embedded from the beginning, and that often puts women at a place of like kind of extreme, I don't know what you call that, like prophecy, or like, you know, like this. These are the people, these are the stargates upon which all life comes from on this planet. So it's like these are the, should be the most protected and valued of our people. And it's not to get all gender nothing about nothing. It's just kind of a reality of how this we come to be, you know. So anyway, yeah, that's so this is why we kind of and it was cool too to like kind of come back and then see all these other. I haven't seen all of the other episodes yet. I'm still kind of taking them all in, and giving them space to breathe, and but seeing how many other people were also kind of tuned into this. I just feel like this is obviously an important thing, and in a lot of cases in all of our communities, everyone's in different places. It's something we have to kind of like really not draw a line in the sand, but ensure that people around us know this is kind of this is our modus operandi. It operates a little different.
You know, it's interesting. I think what you just talked about fits in nicely with what you said in your episode about supporting a message rather than pushing a message. How do you make a distinction between those two ideas, and why was it important for you to get behind somebody else rather than create your own, so to speak?
I think, I mean, that was actually for me one of my first ever singing anyone else's words. So, but it was very cool to be able to sing my mom's words, because that's just like, yeah, anyway, they almost just, it was like it all just fit. And I didn't barely have to do nothing. I was like, what the heck? But anyway, yeah, there, so I guess you're, sorry, I should kind of, sort of get the exactness of your question there, because you were kind of asking if I, so maybe I'll let you rephrase that just one more time.
Yeah, I was just curious because in your interview in the series, you talk about supporting a message versus pushing a message, which is in a way I think unusual for an artist because they it's often their own words and they want to create their own identity. And so I'm just curious how you went about that decision in deciding to rather than, have something that's your own, use your power to support what somebody else was trying to say, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Okay. So I guess to speak from my own experience, I can remember specifically like some of the writers that really kind of hit me were often like people who just had them and like a guitar, or them and a piano, or something like this. Say, you just order them and a drum. You would hear someone just very raw, just you hear their voice really, which is kind of the commanding it all, and then this kind of supporting sound. And it wasn't so much like, you know, and when you hear a band, there's so just so much going on. You're like, who's in the lead here? Like, what's happening? Like, so many things take in when it's just one voice, one instrument. It's kind of like that. So I guess for me, when I was listening to some of that early stuff, and kind of being what would you say, like influenced as a young writer. A lot of times what I noticed, especially around here in Canada, and I'm just talking very locally, was that you would hear a lot of And because you're talking about writing from a perspective that is your own, but in reality, so often what is seemingly our own was like potentially crafted around us. It was potentially rooted in ideologies that were actually not our own, were very much imposed onto us. And but I can remember hearing people speak about empty prairies. And it was like from a folk kind of music point of view, is like talking about, oh, these beautiful empty prairies, golden fields, open sky, this kind of like concept. But it always had to do with I was like, yeah, but where are all the indigenous people? This was as a young man, kind of like hearing, young person hearing these words, and I was like, oh shoot, like what about the indigenous people? So at a very early age, I was like, yo, like the messaging here is important. And I kind of need my messages to be different. Even when it came down to a straight up love song about one specific, person, whether it's a man or a woman that you're all about or whatever. I'm just kind of like, a lot of that stuff, it always felt like, yo, like the best love songs are already done. I'm not saying like, yeah, keep trying, but at the same time, like, give it up for who did what. And we have like, we already have Johnny Mae Matthews, we already have Mary Lou Williams, we already have these people who essentially rewrote the book. They cracked all molds. They in front of us gave us tools that work into infinity. And a lot of times for me, it's about this message. Like, what's the message being sent? And so for me, it's like in occasion in my own writing, I did once quote Michelangelo, the artist, in one of his poems. I also have quoted I'm trying to remember actually that someone recently I quoted because they had been writing about the Constitution and what had to do with like currency, but that was Caleb Cushing. And he was, but anyway, but I only did like one line really as a quote, but and I would sing it though. And I just feel like sometimes, yeah, you're asking me about like what makes you choose to make a supportive sound versus pushing some kind of concept. And I just feel like for myself, the most I ever learned was when I wanted to, when I was interested. And a lot of times with music, it's just about breadcrumbs. Like I can't be out here being like, okay, here's what you do. And actually I don't even know. Like for one, it's not even my role. Like I guess in a sense too, like music for the most part works in all kinds of ways and bringing people together and all this kind of stuff. But seemingly it works most at enriching very small groups of people. And so it's difficult. Like it's a lot of times in this whole concept, it's there's something about not only creating this intellectual property, but it is how you own it. And a lot of us don't even own it. We don't even know how to own it. And even when we get into ownership, you start realizing that like all corporate statuses operate underneath the City of London and the country or the Vatican. And so, it's stuff like this that is really at the at kind of the crux of something of what you question, because I really do feel like in so many ways it's been for me this idea of music and stuff. It has been about sending messages that are around me and around my family, like that I hear, that are in my consciousness, but are not in the public discussion. It's not like a common discourse. So I kind of use parts of this. I take aspects of these important stories and I try to embed that in my own art. And it's always a thing like, is that really your idea? Like, is any of this our idea? I definitely never copy, I never sample when it comes down to creating music. So, but when it comes down to like even the term copy, you hear something and you're an incredible musician with an incredible memory, that can like really like hear something and almost know how to play it immediately, are you not able to then just kind of listen and copy? Like, what is all this? You know, and I think it's all very interesting because it is all this stuff around music. It still kind of comes around property and who owns what, and you know, and it's really tough because at the end of the day, who's got the best lawyer? And personally, like, that's not how I roll. So, but that seems to be the guys who are winning are the ones with those lawyers and stuff, in a sense. And so, I don't know, a lot of my conversation is I try to get beyond all that. I'm like, you know, I can't wait for the days where some of these, you know, de facto kind of systems are just let go. You know, because a lot of times it was just pulling so many people's energy away from what was really important, which is just like, you know, having the best life as you can, and beyond that, like just giving, I guess, and not always taking. So anyway, that's a long-winded answer, but I kind of just feel like we're always pushing a message in a sense. Like just by working, you're pushing somewhere.
Right.
I do also feel like, yeah, these messages, they can be for something. They could be for sale, or they could be for something bigger than sale. Like for me, I always consider this too, and this would be my last comment on this, but a lot of times my payment, it happens when the song is finished. You know, so and it's not to say like what kind of currency? Like how much did you make on that? No. I got paid. In the sense that, like, I put all my love into that, and that's what came out. That wasn't me. This isn't me trying to get a girlfriend or a boyfriend. This is me actually just trying to send messages out to the world, regardless of how much money that makes. I'm not interested in that part. So that's kind of, yeah, that's it.
What I find really interesting about this episode is that you open it and interspersed throughout is it pre-narration? You speaking in your indigenous language. What kind of conversations did you and Connor have about the importance of including something like including speaking parts in an indigenous language, and what is the relationship like between your native language and your art?
Well, I guess for me, we're coming down to vibration and sound. Personally, I do not speak Nehe Wewe, and I don't actually ascribe to speaking any other language outside of English. And I say that specifically too because what I've done in the English words that I've used outside of this specific song is I take them back to their etymological root. As well as I reference all legal dictionaries. That's Black's Law, that's Bouvier's, that's all as many of the law dictionaries as I can, so that my words will not fall out of context. Now, when it comes down to this episode and kind of just the way in which money is kind of working upon a Canadian kind of like artistic something creations. There are kind of stuff to do more with like language revitalization work. And I'm fully supportive of it. But personally, in my own work, I have been working more deeply in within the English confines because it just seems to be a little bit more prevalent, as well as the access to it, speakers, as well as kind of like etymological histories. Are kind of in the public domain. When we speak about Nehe Wewin, we are also speaking about how a language which has been under the kind of auspices or under the effects of linguicide in this country, when we are talking about genocide, it's a multi-layered, multifaceted concept. So, but the genocide has been happening in ways initially with people, moving them, displacing them, kind of also giving credence or status, if you will, to certain people who fit certain colonial narratives. And then when it comes to those who might not fit the colonial narrative, but who are also indigenous to the land of Amexum and or what is commonly referred to as America, you would have these people not allowed to suggest that they're indigenous. And I speak to those specifically nations who have been labeled Negro, Black, and Colored, which are come to the tune would increase the indigenous population in the public mind somewhere to the tune of 100% of where current populations exist. Now, I say all of that because when asked to do this production, there was mention of this language component, but for me, I didn't really ask questions. I still do my own work here in Edmonton, as well as on music, and so I didn't really ask another thing. I just was like, oh yeah, sure, okay, language, well, sure thing. And when it came down to it, I was requested to speak the narration in Nehyewewin, which I suggested too. I did not speak, but I understand how production works too, and specifically TV production. I was not about to stand in the way of any other production. But what I did do is recently I just sent a kind of like a slightly longer message from my heart to some of the production side of the episode, because what happened in my case is I was given the narration spoken by a person who actually spoke the TH dialect. And the dialect where I'm from, of Nehyewewin, is called the Y dialect. So I was kind of, I was a little taken aback because, for one, it does not sound like any of the speakers in my own community or my family. So that was something that I knew that I had to just kind of, I guess, be okay with. Because at least it did sound like it was an elder on that side who was speaking. But what I did as a musician was I made my voice sound like his. Now, that's not me speaking this language. And I've been kind of waiting for the English episode to release. I have a little letter that I've written just to kind of like clarify all that. Because as much as I am extremely supportive of this concept, from a holistic point of view, all I had suggested to some of the what you call that, producers and this kind of that at the APTN, was just that maybe if this kind of stuff is going to happen, like obviously some people my age and younger are already fluent speakers and they're practicing every day. This is something that is a part of their life. Now, this can't be all of our life. For that matter, some of us grow up in China, and we only the ones of us who are in China, they will only learn Cantonese or Mandarin. So and this kind of thing, like, but what is it that sets their life apart? And is it the vibration and sound coming out of their mouth? Or is there some kind of other resonance going on that is able to tune in at any language? And this is kind of where I'm getting to, but yeah. So we kind of created that thing. I guess excited for those who do speak the TH dialect for what they think of it. But more than anything, this was something that I was kind of mimicking, and that sounds horrible. But at the same time, I just have to be real, and it's not, I as much as I appreciate those kind of things, I think it doesn't get to the heart of the conversation. A lot of times it fulfills some other concept that a lot of times is related to grant funding and other kind of streams of money that all do come from a government, from the Canadian government and stuff like this. So that's kind of what it boiled down to for me. And I was like, you know what, in my community, or in, I feel like true Indigenous production at all levels, I think there would be a thoroughness to this. It went even a bit further. But there are other factors holding the Indigenous communities back still when it comes to how these productions are made. And that's no blame, no fault on the APTN or any of their team, because It was one of the most beautiful experiences I've ever had. It felt like it showcased the work I was doing in a way that, like, I was like, no one ever looks at our stuff like this. Like, came right into my house. I was able to show them like where I'm at. Like, it was just cool, like super bomb. And then this one aspect was just kind of like, it's perfect, it's cool. I wish in the future that if we're going to do things like this, that we at least go within the artist's community and ask for the speakers in that community. Because then these things can be said in a way that truly are from exactly where this person's from. Nehiao people, they span like a huge distance in Canada. So it's like, and in the thing is, there are what I from what I come to understand from my own family is that there are also kind of hidden messages and meanings within each dialect. So again, like this, just in the depth of language, this was something I felt that was it's now been created, and I don't feel overly embarrassed or anything, but at the same time, I have been very much like, I have, this was not m coming from my own practice. This was something I created to help out this production. Yo, Jerry!
Hey, my sincerest apologies in my tardiness. I'm sure I'm just interrupting the flow here, but I'll step
Not
back,
at
finish.
all, not at all.
Right on. Oh, there's some screens. I'm a Luddite. I was just staring at myself in there.
Hi,
Hi,
Jason.
Dan. It's, I get
You know,
sorry for the
I'm on my
late jump in here.
no
Thanks so
worries.
much for coming with us.
Chris had informed me of your situation, so it's
Yeah, we had a had a bit of a blowout at a rave last
yeah,
night. I'm sorry.
you heard you had some issues with your subs.
Yeah.
This is great. We've just been talking about legacy a lot, and now that you're here, I wanted to get your opinion of sort of this episode in this process and how you found it.
Oh, well, it was just an honor to be able to get to meet all you folks and get to get together at the audio department and spend some time working on a song that Chris and I made. It was a real great thing to be able to start that process because of the offer of meeting with you folks. So yeah, it was super cool to begin this piece of art and then go and meet new folks in a couple of new spaces and build a song, and then and getting to go for the video shoot. That was just a whole nother mind-blowing experience, meeting cool folks doing cool art. Yeah, it was pretty special, super special, especially since with everything that had happened with things getting shut down and stuff, there'd been a great pause in the work that Chris and I were doing. So it was nice. It was nice to have an impetus to get back at it. So I'm super grateful for that.
In terms of your collaborations together, how in creating music, how does that normally work? Does one of you maybe do work on the lyrics? Does one of you work on a song? Does it start with beats? How organic is that process?
Well, we have some, I guess we kind of have some loosely defined roles in that Chris takes care of all of lyrical and poetic license. And most of the music I take care of, though Chris helps with music as well, especially with guitar work and stuff. But as far as like the compositions go, most of the compositions that we've been working on all actually start from a single modular patch that I create, like a single sort of drone that like a single note that sort of starts an emotional response for a session of the day. And then this drone is usually just one note, but throughout the evolving of that drone, pieces of rhythms, and each of the songs that we've been working on, I'll start from one of these singular drone pieces. So, like, if you were to pull all things we recorded away, they all start with a singular sort of ambient drone piece. Is
And
a kind of loose process.
every well, I find, art in general is just very fluid, right? Like you sort of have the foundations, but it has to be malleable by its nature in a lot of ways. For both of you, was there a favorite moment that you had during the filming of this piece? Something that I guess really stuck out to you, maybe in terms of the message, or just in terms of the actual working day, or maybe you saw a cut and you're like, hey, I didn't think it turned out like that, but it did.
I mean, the whole thing was so cool. Like, I guess the studio day with Nick was pretty amazing, just because that audio department is quite a famous little studio in Edmonton, and so it was very cool to kind of just work in that space, and that those microphones sound amazing. And then the video shoot day was like, I even told the makeup artist, I was like, I don't think I ever put on makeup. Like, I think when I was a child, like, my cousins went through some makeup on me, but like, I don't, I'm just, and not, like, whatever. I don't mean to sound so vanilla, but at the same time, I was just kind of like, that was cool as hell. It was fun. It was like a weird shot. It was very much like not Jason and I's story. This was Connor's concept, but he's a filmmaker, man. Like, he makes cool looking stuff. I don't know what to say. Like, it's cool.
You mentioned that, like, being Connor's concept. There's something like really freeing after working on art, and then you're given this opportunity where folks are willing to then create art around that's still is mind blowing to me. So being able to, like, all of a sudden be involved in a process that wasn't ours, but was connected. I super, super enjoyed that process. But the whole process of this, really, for me, the most exciting part of all of this is this song with these lyrics from Krista's mother. Is I don't know if there's like a more important piece of work yet that I've been able to be a part of. Like, it's those lyrics, I think they really led the entire process, and a lot of the process of all that Chris and I do. Like, family is so important to us that we were able to wrangle a project like this, with the kind help of you folks. Is like, it doesn't even really quite seem real. It still seems conceptual,
Yeah.
Like,
No, for sure. I mean, it's when someone's able to assist in these productions just get that much bigger. There's only so much from our end. You can stick us in the fanciest studio, and that's about as big as it gets. And that's huge. I'm not downplaying it, but then when you add film and you add, a TV and then broadcast. This is a whole thing in this messaging that's very beyond us, very so amazing. And for me, that it feels very poignant that this is my mom's message going out there. Like, this is important work, and I'm so grateful for Jason, and so grateful for this, be able to be part of this.
Chris and I were talking a lot about message earlier and supporting somebody else's message, but I'm curious, when audiences see this, whether they're Indigenous or settler or non-Indigenous, Is there some sort of message or crux of an idea that you would like them to come away with or at least have a think about?
I don't know so much. I can't speak as much on like the video portion of that because you know that's I think Connor has a strong vision for that. For me, what I is what I think the most important thing in this is your mother's words are the most important. And anytime you have a moment to listen to your mother, you should. And remember these times, and that we have this, that Chris and I can work on a piece like this. It kind of exists between two worlds. You know what I mean? Like those words are very tangible. When I hear them, there's a connection that I feel that I don't feel with other songs I've been a part of. And yeah, I think that's if I had to guess, that's probably due to the importance that I think that both Chris and I put on mothers. I think I shouldn't speak for Chris, but that's what I feel.
Yeah, and also the only other thing I would add is just because yeah, absolutely, that's exactly what we were talking about earlier, Jay, and also that this concept, like these messages coming out here from Indigenous people, this is huge, this is big, and it's only at the beginning because when I was growing up, these kinds of things didn't exist, the APPN and all any of the identity work that has now gone on, and really since AIM in a sense, but at the same time too, like I was also mentioning before, this goes much deeper. This goes right into the heart of who are the Indigenous people of the Americas. And I think this question rattles and shakes all governments across all the lands, especially when we're talking about the UK. And Italy or the Vatican, whatever. But we are, this is coming to a spot where there's so much awakening consciousness and so many, and recognizing that the indigenous players in this game have not been all who we thought we were. Like Charlie Parker is indigenous. Mary Lou Williams is indigenous. Chaka Khan is indigenous. Grandmaster Caz is indigenous. This is going deep, y'all. And like and these messages coming at us are only going to get kind of wilder. We're going to get bigger because and because you've asked how are settlers and indigenous people supposed to react, or what is kind of the main vibe to catch off of this? And I hope that we are our part, Jason and I's voice is adding specifically to this whole collection of voices in a way that is slightly different. And is going to only get more and more in this vein of breaking away from some of the color codes. And because, yeah, anyway, I mean, I don't need to get too deep at this moment. At the main thing is that the messages are deep and they are coming. There are so many people who are now speaking to their own I indigenous identity, and it already has been in control of our media. Like a lot of what we've been terming as genre has actually been indigenous creations, and they had to just term it as with a genre just to take away from the fact that these are indigenous people creating them. And that's whether you say jazz, funk, all kinds of different hip hop, which is actually higher infinite power helping our people. But regardless, we have to, these messages are getting more complex, and that's what our little message here is meant to do.
Well, the series is Amplify, And your episode is episode 211, Legacy, directed by Connor McNally, which airs on Friday, December 22nd at 7:30 on APTN. I hope I have all that information right. Yes, correct me if I'm wrong. So I encourage all the listeners of this podcast, especially if they're in Canada, to go and check out this beautiful episode and this wonderful tribute to Chris's mother. Chris and Jason, thank you so much for your time today.
Well, thanks for chatting with us.
No worries. And yeah, love the episode, and we look forward to what the future holds for both of you.
Right on.
And once again, that was my interview with Chris Harper and Jason Morris. Their episode of Amplify, entitled Legacy, airs Friday, December 22nd on APTN. My thanks to Jason and Chris. My thanks also to Lucy Tuararuch, the producer of the Metatuck Language Weather Reports. That does it for me today. Thanks for tuning in, and I will see you next time. Bye for now.